This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, and with me, Cam Rasslan, today on the Zoom machine, we have, well, they're both educationalists, but she is a teacher, she's a poet, she is a curator of festivals, once upon a time a filmmaker, photographer, she is Bernice Trolley.
Hello.
Hello. And we have another educator. He's a rock star. And you know him as Asmil Yunor. Asmil, yeah. Great to see you.
Oh, great to see you again, man.
Our three topics this week are going to be, topic number one is it safe to go out yet? Topic number two will be TV adaptations of books. I think I got that right. Mm-hmm. And Final topic number three will be, because it was Malaysia Teachers Day the other day, pastoral care for students. So for topic number one, is it safe to go out yet? We're talking on the Zoom. I don't know about you guys. I have been really MCOing. I've MCO'd like professionally.
Wow. Well.
And I've not really been out much. And now that we've got this supposed... Well, things
CMCO.
Like CMCO. I haven't actually worked out what the C stands for yet.
Conditional.
Oh, okay.
I'm Legion Thumb is just can.
And I know people who have gone out and they're going back to work and they're out amongst human people. I don't know if... I just can't do it. I'm kind of super scared. I don't know what it is. I'm scared or I've gone into a shell.
Are you comfortable? No.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't know about you guys. Are you out? Have you gone out into the world now?
Yeah, of course. Otherwise we'd starve. You know, I have to buy groceries.
I know that. But I mean,
yeah, he uses an app all the time, I suppose.
No. I'm with you there. But I mean, like, you know, go to meetings, go to restaurants with people, go
no,
visit
not restaurants.
People. Have you visited people?
I've visited one friend. It's just been the two of us. And we did this last weekend and the weekend before. For that, and it's just that's the only other person. I have neighbors who are very, very good friends, so they've come over. We've had movie nights and shared food and stuff like that. But I think I've seen three friends in the last 2 months. Yeah, that's it.
Asmil?
Yeah.
None. I'm just working from home. But this is actually a fantasy come true. I'm generally like most musicians. I'm home. I've always been homely. I wouldn't say I'm antisocial, but we're always lonely. So I like this. But of course, I suppose when it's forced on you, it's a bit different, lah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but
but it's okay, lah. You know,
yeah, but you play gigs. I mean, back in the old days.
That's definitely affected a lot. Yeah, I mean, that's a big part, lah. That gigging stopped. But I hadn't had many gigs planned anyway, so kind of worked. Got a new album I'm supposed to launch in July, so I've got to delay that. But I've been productive. I've been writing, I've been collaborating online. Several things have happened recently. I just released an EP, a YouTube EP of just videos, songs I did. So in a way, I've kind of balanced it out. I think I'm just used to the fact that I'm used on leveraging the lemon that life throws at me really well. That you know, I've kind of I'm riding the wave in this.
I don't know, when life what is it, gives me lemons, I say, I don't like lemonade.
well, I need the vitamins for me. Is that
But Bernice, I mean, you're going to go out. You're going to do it. Is it you? You are your homebody? Are you now?
No,
frozen at
home,
or you want to go out?
Not particularly. I mean, I do miss going out sometimes and meeting friends and having dinner with a bunch of people and a good conversation over a nice bottle of wine, that kind of thing. But I've been at residencies, where I'm trying to finish a book or something. And it's like 4 months of not seeing anyone and just locking myself in the room and working. Yeah. So that's kind of like this now. But the problem is that I can't write. I can't think of is this story even relevant? Are these characters even relevant? Publishing is going to change forever. Yeah. It is what publishers want to publish after this and what people want to read is going to change. If you look at what happened after the Second World War and the work that came out of that and the work that came out after the First World War. And Shakespeare wrote during the plague. So I think this is going to impact arts and creativity in a very, very major kind of way, you know. It's going to change everything.
I don't know if I'm ready for that. I wasn't really great with the system.
I don't think it's about whether we're ready. Well, you just gotta embrace it, man. I think that's what happened in the past too, right?
I think that we've discovered a lot about ourselves over the last few months. Sometimes we've discovered things that we didn't know or we don't like. I think I knew it all along. Actually, that my life
You don't like human beings. You don't like people.
No. It's not that I don't like them. No, God bless. They're marvelous. No, it's that we need them, don't we? No, I think my life actually has been spent in a state of MCO, and maybe it's my natural state of being.
I think any writers, right? I think all three of us. We write for a living or what we do. Yeah. You need that. I think isolation is a creative. Is creation is an isolated, you know, kind of
process.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, we haven't been isolated. Asmil, you've got your family.
But I self isolate. Yeah. I mean, I always self isolate anyway, but there's no MCO. Fine.
And Bernice, you're
with me alone.
you're with your children as well, aren't you, Bernice?
Yeah, I am.
But we've been
socially distancing in our apartment, so, you know.
For the last 15 years.
There's rooms and doors, come.
There's walls. Yeah.
Okay, well, I haven't really learned much by talking to you, but I guess I got to be brave and just go out there one day and just be amongst people and just sort of say, don't talk to me, put that mask on, get away, run away. No.
Which is kind of cool because people don't stay away from you when you're in public.
Yeah.
Okay. But you know, I went out the other day and I had my temperature tested 4 times.
Yeah.
And you know, and I had to write my information and my ID and my phone number and stuff like that. So it's just a very different kind of reality. It's just everyone's in masks. If you're not wearing a mask, everyone just stares at you like, why aren't you wearing a mask? If you don't have a lot of people wearing gloves as well. So it's just like, it's just very, very strange.
It's strange.
It's like a movie. It's like a movie. For me, it's just VR in real life. It's like, I'm in this dystopian movie.
Yeah.
And I like the way, I mean, remember Godard made a film about dystopia and looked just like normal. So this for me is, I think we got it wrong with dystopian films. It's like Blade Runner. All this. It actually looks like this. It's just lame. It's just a lot of pain of like temperature and writing stuff down gloves and all that. This is it. I'm sorely disappointed that this is dystopia. Okay. I want my money back.
Okay, we'll move on. We'll move on though, because Bernice has been spending her time, like a lot of us, watching a lot of TV. And so, TV adaptations.
Yes, I want to talk about, I just want to mention 5 in particular. Well, it's a lot, but it's just, there's just a slew of, you know, just BBC and Netflix and whatever, Showtime, creating some really, really good stuff. So Normal People, which is an adaptation from Sally Rooney's novel, which just became this cult Irish hit, you know, it was shortlisted for the Booker. There's a 12 series BBC show, which I watched, Little Fires Everywhere, which is based on a Celeste Ng novel, which is about sort of class and suburban families in Ohio. Reese Witherspoon's in it, Kerry Washington. It's excellent. So what I'm saying is that basically these adaptations are actually really, really good. The Plot Against America, which is based on a Philip Roth novel about America becoming fascist after the end of the Second World War. So Charles Lindbergh becomes the prime minister or president of the U.S., Winona Ryder's in that. John Turturro plays a rabbi. It's just fascinating stuff, told from the point of view of a Jewish family living in New Jersey. The Luminaries, this sort of tome of a novel by Eleanor Catton, which won the Booker in 2013, has also been adapted for TV, and that is an extraordinarily difficult book to adapt. I've only seen one episode. It's just kind of like, you know, big budget, Eva Green's in it, sort of like vast landscape, you know, west coast of New Zealand kind of thing. And then finally, My Brilliant Friend, which is a series of novels by the very mysterious Italian writer Elena Ferrante, which is also very difficult to adapt. But it's just been extraordinary how these showrunners have managed to take these wonderful books and create these wonderful, you know, tapestries of very complex characters on TV. So yeah, it's just been kind of fun, really, just watching all the stuff.
You say fun, not a lot of comedies in there.
Well, how many funny books have you? How many funny novels are there? I mean, I don't, you know, like.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Fair enough. But did you learn anything? I mean, but these were all made back in the old days, pre the plague and all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And many of these actually were have been so long in the pipeline. They probably made pre-Trump. And the world has changed a lot. I was watching, what was I watching the other day? Homeland.
Yes, yes.
Right.
Yeah.
And
Homeland's excellent.
It's excellent, but at the same time, post-Trump, it's just ridiculous. Watching it, it's like, you people were so naive. You know, you were protecting the nation against traitors, and yet, God damn it, the president himself is so easily became one. I mean, they're all still relevant, these things, are they?
What?
Yeah.
What, Trump?
These TV shows you've been talking about.
These TV shows. Well, I suppose it's kind of like, you know, this is before, it's before COVID and after COVID. It's like post-COVID, you know, pre-COVID. Yeah. I mean, to answer your question, yes, of course, these books were written, you know, some very recently, some not so recently, like the Philip Roth book came up, I think, in the 80s or the 90s. But it's just the fact that, you know, like to adapt a novel that is so complex and so layered and so nuanced to television and to break it up into like 6 parts or 12 parts or whatever. I mean, it's a really complicated process. And to get the writers who are invested in it, to get the producers who are invested in it, is just, you know, I think it's just extraordinary, you know, to take a book and then create it into, you know, to create a different medium, you know, to from a book to a TV series. I think as a writer, you know, we're all creative types. I think, is that a dream? I mean, do you see that as a sort of a sense of accomplishment, another success, perhaps? Like, I don't know. It's just something that I was thinking about as well. Like, you know, are these writers happy with what's happened with their books? You know, and if not, can they say that they're not happy with it? Or, you know, I don't know.
Asmil, have you seen any of the, have you?
No, but I heard about it. Yeah, it's crazy, man. It's not easy. And I think, I guess as an author, you probably might have mixed feelings, right? Every time it's in someone's hands. But at the same time, I think it's interesting to see interpretation. I think that's it's crazy, man. How do you, it's not easy to adapt.
Film and TV is very surface. Yeah. I mean, it's dialogue. It's the raise of an eyebrow. But getting inside the head,
that's the thing.
Is the thing. And senses like smell, for instance, disappear on TV. Sound even.
It's not easy to get your audiences happy because your audience are going to be the people who've read it and, you know, like, critical about it. Yeah.
And I also, sorry, I just wanted to mention, like, these are the ones that are really good. So there was also a movie adaptation of Donna Tartt's The Goldfinch, which is an extremely difficult, like, that just did not work. Even with Nicole Kidman and Edgar Elgort, it just did not work.
You read all of these books, Bernice. You read all of them, have you?
I've read most of them. Most of them, yes. I haven't read The Luminaries because it's like really, it's like 830 pages. It's just like, it's a very difficult to read. So again, it's like, it's so difficult to read. How did these showrunners take all these words and, you know what I mean? It's like, it's just boggling. It's just boggling.
Yeah, yeah. I've been reading a lot of Dickens, and I've in my mind adapting them to TV.
Oh yeah.
Not to movies. I think that TV is the way to go because it has the time to go sideways. Mm-hmm. You can go sideways. You can even go backwards. You know, in plot, as it were. You can.
Yeah.
Movies are always like moving forwards, plot, and you lose a lot in that, and you lose a lot of character.
So, which Dickens book have you been sort of adapting in your head?
Oh, Oliver Twist.
Oh, but that's been done to death.
No, but it hasn't, you see. It hasn't. I thought it had because I grew up with those movies. But when I read the book for the first time, there's like a whole half a book there, which is completely cut out for the films.
Right.
And I really wanted to, actually, I think it would be really nice to make an Oliver Twist that people in 1836, an 1836 audience could watch and go, oh yeah, this is our story. Because we always make it for the modern audience, so we cut out a lot of uncomfortable aspects.
Yeah.
You know, and it would be really nice to see what was in their heads at that time. Mm. Hey, we have to move on, I'm afraid.
Okay.
But very quickly, Bernice, you mentioned a whole bunch of things. Which is the best one?
Wow. Ooh, it's very difficult. I really like Normal People and Little Fires Everywhere are just fantastic. So these two. So Normal People and Little Fires Everywhere.
Okay. And when we come back, we're going to be on topic number 3, which will be about pastoral care for students here on A Bit of Culture, BFM 89.9. And we're back with myself, Cam Ruslan, Bernice Chorley, and Azmil Yunor. And now, topic number 3 is pastoral care for students. It was Malaysia Teachers Day the other day, and we have here two of Malaysia's finest teachers. And Azmil, we're going to be losing Azmil in a short while because he's going to have to dash off and do a Zoom class.
Go to rush hour. Yeah.
But I actually asked him to do this topic because I have a friend of mine who's a teacher, a lecturer at university in the UK. And she was saying that actually so much of her time, the majority of her time is spent not just lecturing and researching and whatnot, but is actually pastoral care with the students. The students are always knocking on her door. Students who aren't even necessarily her students. And they just need to talk through what's going on in their lives because there's so much more to learning and teaching than just sitting in a classroom. So, Azmil, I'd like to ask. I mean, do you experience this? Is it a part of your job description?
Yeah, it's in the contract. This is a pastoral care.
Of course.
So I mean, even if it's not in a contract, it's kind of expected. You know, people always think like, "Hey, Azmil, what are you doing? I got class." They think like our life is just going to class and you know, I had a student once told me, "Wow, sir, your life as a lecturer is really nice, huh? What do you mean?" It's like, you just come class and then you go back to your room. See, there's this myth that we're just there and like, yeah, like do a karate thing and we go back and meditate. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of pastoral care going on. But there's a different ways how you can approach it. Some academics just leave the door open and sometimes it really interrupts. Sometimes you gotta tell them, okay, this is my time. And actually that's what we my university, at least we do that. Like, and I suppose our universities do that too. You have to declare your consultation times. Mm. So you put your time there. But that doesn't mean you don't actually out of that meet. But my previous institution, where they kind of discourage even like academics or lecturers to have lunch with students. Like a colleague was spoken to by somebody above. It's like, what? It's like, so there's also that paternalistic, you know, they call you sir, mister, that's fine. But sir, I don't mind. That's respect. But when I went to this, where I'm teaching now, initially the culture is a bit different. People call you by first name and that, because I understand the beginnings of the department I was in. But yeah, you start to see it's a profession that's kind of esteemed but not sexy to be soulless. Nobody goes out and saying like, be a lecturer today. No, nobody makes that. Yeah. They romanticize public school teachers if you see TV series, but academics, there's a certain.
Okay, well, Miss Chorley.
Yes.
What about you? Do you be nodding your head?
No, I'm always take a sort of invested kind of approach into the emotional well-being of my students. And there, because there sometimes, you know, the first thing I say in class every semester is like, look, if you can't come to class, you have to let me know. You can't just go silent on me. If there's a reason, you have to let me know. And I've had students who've been, you know, battled with depression, some very, very serious mental conditions. I had a student who has epilepsy. I have a student who's blind. There's been a whole range of individuals with real characters who have come through my classes. And if I have to, you know, take that extra step and talk to them, I will do it, because, you know, I make it very clear to my students, like, look, if there's an issue and if you can talk to me about it, please do. Because, you know, I'm a parent, I'm a single mother, I have children of my own, and I understand what you're going through. So that door is always open. And as a result, I think, you know, if someone has an issue with an assignment, or if it's, you know, because I teach creative writing, so you're always working with issues that are very close to the bone, to the very close to the heart of who they are as people, as individuals, and they're trying to find their voices as writers. So I've had students cry. I've had, you know, I've picked up the phone at, you know, all hours, not all hours, I mean, you know, but, you know, I'm someone who's there for my students. And
what's the
I think
limit?
It just goes with the category.
But what's the limit? I mean, is there a point where, you know, let's say you see that something's wrong, that person is not prepared to open up. I mean, which is their right.
Yeah,
and,
of course.
You know, it can become interference, can't it? Isn't there a limit that you find within yourself? It's like, I better not go.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's if it's a real issue, then it's something that I would communicate with the head of my department so that everyone's on board, everyone's on the same page. And if it's a little bit too out of my hands, then okay, sorry. I mean, you know, you're gonna have to take over because this is out of my league. So when in doubt, and if it really gets a little bit too intense, then you have to defer to the institution itself.
Yeah, Asmil?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you take training. I'm actually a qualified mental health first aider. So I'm actually trained. I volunteer as a counselor.
I don't know.
So I mean, mental health.
The fact that you can't quite remember the term.
Yeah. Because it's all terms, man. It's come to me at first. Before this, I wasn't any of this, but it would come to me. And, you know, I had students that, again, similar like what Bernice had gone through. I have even, like, when it was once a student had a drug problem, come see me and say, and I asked him, like, so why do you see me? Because you're a musician. So, okay. So stereotype, you know, but nevertheless, I think that is the unspoken part of the job. And sometimes even just for a chat, you know, sometimes you just want something to speak to. And I find it offensive when people think maybe millennials, they're very distant on their device. But actually, you know, they want to connect. And I think it is, you know, our duty to kind of like encourage that. Even now, I mean, I do like extra class with this MCO going on. Some classes I've seen like, man, the class time's not enough. Hey guys, I'm going to do a bonus class. I'm not going to do attendance or anything. Yeah, you guys want to come in. It's this time. Let's meet up.
So, oh God, I wish I'd had you two as teachers, but
I'm straight, huh? No extensions, man.
No, I know. I mean, you know, tough
yes.
love and all that. But
do the work.
I might actually have passed an exam. It would be, my mother would have been so proud. Anyway, I want to ask one last question, which perhaps Asmil, I don't know, maybe you know more than, my friend in the UK, she's a woman. But she was saying that for, in the UK, for male lecturers in particular, that, you know, they're happy to do pastoral care, but at the same time, they are really scared of harassment charges and whatnot, and also temptations. And so, are you two aware of this changing environment? Is this an atmosphere that's in the air in higher education?
Oh yeah, it is.
Oh yeah, I mean,
There's always exploitation in that line too. I mean, in the past, I mean, I heard war stories because there's a lot. In the past, I mean, like, I won't say when, but I've heard stories of that where, you know, lecturers take advantage and have been taken advantage of, and you know, you've got to understand kind of the boundaries where you come in, and especially I guess, there's a certain you gotta understand when the lines are crossed, and especially between the genders.
Yeah. Bernice, you've come across, you know this?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, of course, they're always, you know, you always hear of incidences and stuff like that, but it goes both ways. I mean, you have to respect boundaries. They have to respect your boundaries as well. Mm. And I mean, I don't see it as a problem, but a lot of my students actually become friends. You know, I have students whom I taught when I was, you know, back in, well in the 1990s, you know, when I was, when I first came back from Canada. It's like, I'm still friends with these people.
Yeah. That is important.
It's very important that you develop this, you know, there's a mentor mentee relationship, but then you actually become friends, and you know, and then that's something that I really, really enjoy.
It's not this attitude where, look, I'm a lecturer, I know everything. You know, it's that's not the case. I even tell classes usually, it's like, hey, come on, man. Now we have this sort of mentor mentee thing, but one day who knows? Mm. I'm on the job, you'll be my boss one day. Who knows? I might be taking lessons from you, you know?
Bernice, as she alluded to just now, she actually does know what she's doing, because she got sent to Canada by the Malaysian government to become a teacher, to learn how to teach. But she is a national treasure. And we do have it. We have to do it as she says, and we got to stand up when she walks into her room. So we move on though to thanks for that, guys. We move on to the final part of the show, recommendations. We recommend something that we think might be of interest. I go first. My recommendation is, I haven't watched nearly as much stuff on the TV, etc., as I think Bernice has been doing. By the way, all that stuff that you talked about, was that all Netflix, or where was it?
No, it's various channels. Okay. The only one on Netflix is Outlander, which I didn't mention, but
I know you like that one. Bit Mills and Boons, that one. But I watched one thing. It's, I've been wanting to watch it for years, actually, and I finally found it on Netflix. It's an Irish movie called Young Offenders. It's about two young, they're 15-year-old boys who, I don't want to call them morons, they're not idiots, but they are misinterpreted, and they discover in some small, I think it's the city of Cork, they hear that an enormous shipment of cocaine had washed up on the shores, and they've determined to go over and find a bag of cocaine and become rich. So it's about that. It's hilarious, though. And they never, well, I don't want to do a spoiler alert, but it's really good. Young Offenders, it's in English, but you're going to have to watch it with subtitles, because they're Irish accent.
It's really authentic.
Really. But it's hilarious, and it's a movie that I enjoyed so much. So, Young Offenders, put the subtitles on. Bernice, what's your recommendation?
Well, I've been watching a lot of chefs sort of, you know, have these online Instagram cooking shows every day. So, I've been following David Chang, Padma Lakshmi, someone else I can't remember. But I've been watching our very own Sugu Pavitra, who has become this YouTube sensation.
Yeah.
And, you know, she's 28 years old, her husband's 29, and they're just, you know, it's just really, really just, it's just very kind of like comforting watching this young couple with their kids, you know, eat together, and, you know, her make this wonderful food. Her crab curry looks awesome, so I'm definitely going to check that out. Yeah, so Sugu Pavitra on YouTube.
And it's like in the millions. So,
I've seen some of her shows. It's like, there's imposters now. It's crazy. Yeah.
People
stealing their identities. But, you know, she's been getting a lot of support from, our Prime Minister sent her a care package, which included a tripod. you're right. There's imposters now.
Oh, okay.
But, yeah, it's really heartwarming.
Warms
the cockles of my heart watching her cook.
Okay.
Definitely, man.
So, Asmil, what you got? What's your recommendation?
I think me and Bernice are on the same channel. We're both another YouTube. But I've been, but instead of a channel, I've been spending a lot of time on YouTube. But randomly looking, strangely, I would find myself looking at videos of tourists making videos about coming to Malaysia. I've been randomly watching that. Just like, oh, click that. And it's fascinating. Fascinating to see what's been said. They say like six things you shouldn't do. But the most creative was this Korean guy who said like, 10 reasons why you shouldn't visit Malaysia. if you don't like food, don't come to Malaysia. So, okay, so he's kind of twisted that around. But it's fascinating to see this really low budget. You know, they're shooting themselves, talking about coming to a country, you know. So yeah. Just seeing Malaysia in a different eye, I think that's kind of really...
That's a brilliant idea. Yeah. Yeah, we should do that. We should all do that. And that was a great idea. Okay. So that brings us to the end of this week's show. Asmiel's going to have to... He's now 2-3 minutes late for his class.
Little pumping.
Class.
But I just... only reminds me now to thank the two teachers of the year. They have been voted as Malaysian teachers of the year. Asmiel Yunor and Bernie Shorey.
Thanks, Cam.
And please join us, all of you, next week for another exciting episode of A Bit of Culture here on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.